Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. And thanks again for all your support in the membership drive that ended yesterday. It allows us to serve you and the whole community, so thanks for chipping in, whatever you did. A program note for this morning, no Ask the Mayor today. We do that just about every Friday, as you probably know, but the mayor canceled late last night because of a meeting with Vice President Kamala Harris, as I understand it, that got scheduled for during the show today, and being merely the mayor of New York City compared to the Vice President of the United States, his office couldn't tweak the time. They did try. So no Ask the Mayor today. So we begin the day with Steve Bannon, Kyrsten Sinema, and Tom Malinowski all in the crosshairs of Congress right now. Bannon, you probably know about, the right-wing firebrand former Trump advisor, now officially held in contempt of Congress for refusing a subpoena to testify about January 6th, and Congress wants the Justice Department to prosecute him for that. Malinowski, maybe you didn't know about yet, so hello, New Jersey. This is your Tom Malinowski. The House Ethics Committee has a report with some serious questions about the Garden State Democrats' stock trades. We'll get to that. And then there's Kyrsten Sinema, the holdout Democratic senator from Arizona, one of the two, along with Joe Manchin of West Virginia, right, holding back President Biden's Build Back Better bill for child care, home health care for the elderly and severely disabled, more competitive prescription drug pricing, climate change protection, and more. On the plus side, House Ways and Means Committee Chairman Richard Neal says he talked to Sinema yesterday and thinks she's ready to make a deal. On the downside for her, five U.S. military veterans who were advisors to Senator Sinema have quit, sending her a scathing letter saying she's hanging her constituents out to dry. That is reported in the New York Times, and joining me now is New York Times congressional reporter Luke Broadwater, who is covering that and, in fact, all three of the stories I mentioned. Luke, thanks for coming on today. Welcome to WNYC.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And I'll clue the listeners in on the fact that we asked you at close to midnight last night when we learned the mayor was canceling. So thanks for being a sport.
Well, I'm happy to be the mayor's backup plan.
Kyrsten Sinema, was this your scoop about the five veterans who quit as her advisors?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, yeah, we had that first. So I guess that's a scoop. I don't really like to talk about scoops because I don't care too much about who gets things first. But honestly, as a reporter, I care about getting important stories and doing them right. But yes, we had this one first.
All right. That's very upstanding. So let's talk about the content. They accused her of answering to big donors rather than, quote, your own people, meaning the voters of Arizona. And I gather that she gets more campaign funding from the pharmaceutical industry than most other members of Congress. So tell us about the prescription drug pricing provision of the bill that she is believed to be opposing, and then we'll get into other things that the veteran singled out.
Sure. This is one of the hallmarks of the Biden plan, which is to, and frankly, it's how they expected to pay for a good portion of this sweeping policy bill, domestic policy bill that President Biden wants. The issue here is whether or not the federal government can negotiate the price of prescription drugs. This is something the pharmaceutical companies do not want. It has the potential to cut into their profits very heavily. And but it could potentially save the federal government a lot of money and fund a lot of the other things that President Biden wants to do, pre-K, universal pre-K, community college, free 2 years of community college funding, just the whole litany of things in the it is sweeping what was to be a $3.5 trillion policy bill. Ms. Sinema has privately opposed that measure, as have some of the House, more centrist House Democrats. And so that looks like it's in serious trouble of making it into the final package. It's one of several things that both Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin, the two more centrist Democrats in the Senate, have held up in Joe Biden's plan. And frankly, they are responsible for causing about half of the plan to likely be cut out. We're not exactly sure what will end up in it at the end of the day, but it does seem like it will be only about half of what progressives and mainstream Democrats and the president really wanted.
Yeah, and I want, as we go along, to compare what Sinema's objections are to what Manchin's objections are, because I think they're not the same by and large. And so two big swaths of things are apparently going to have to get out of the bill to get to yes with both of them. But let me linger on the prescription drug Medicare thing for a minute, because we've talked about it on this show. It's in the news for people who pay close attention to the news. But I think a lot of people don't know what this is and what this means. So, for example, I'm in Blue Cross Blue Shield, right? Private insurance. I get my health insurance through Blue Cross Blue Shield. Blue Cross Blue Shield can negotiate price with the pharmaceutical companies for how much I and other members of Blue Cross Blue Shield actually get charged for prescription drugs, therefore how much Blue Cross Blue Shield has to pay them in order to cover me. Medicare can't do that. All the private plans can. Medicare, the biggest insurance plan in the United States, I guess, government insurance for, you know, most people over 65. Medicare cannot negotiate price with pharmaceutical companies. So they can just say to Medicare, to the government, to the taxpayer, we want you to pay $100 per pill when Blue Cross and Blue Shield is negotiating $50 per pill. Do I have that right? Am I overstating this?
Yeah, that's correct. There have been some studies on this because the one branch of the federal government which is allowed to negotiate is the Veterans Affairs, and they end up paying some magnitudes lower on the dollar for prescription drugs than Medicare does. So like there's a good example of a slice of the federal government that does this already and pays much cheaper prices. And so this has been a policy idea, honestly, for well over a decade, maybe two decades, to do this reform, but Congress has just never been able to get it done. You know, if you talk to people like Senator Sanders, Senator Warren, they blame the lobbying industry, that there's just the pharmaceutical industry just has too much influence over too many senators. And despite there being a lot of public support for this, despite the president being on board for it, they just cannot get the votes to make it happen. I mean, even Senator Manchin's in favor of this. So it really is only a few holdouts among the Democratic Party that are blocking this reform from happening. You know, the pharmaceutical industry is flooding the airwaves with ads about this. Right now, they are claiming that it would, gut seniors' healthcare, that it would cause seniors to go without certain medications. And if you talk to the CEOs of these companies, they say basically they would have to stop investing in research and development because their profits would be cut so much. I mean, these are the kind of sort of threats and some would say scare tactics that the pharmaceutical industry is using to try to prevent this this reform from taking place.
I did see one of the pharmaceutical industry's TV commercials about that, where they were emphasizing that the government would tell you which medications you could take if this goes through. It's not how I've understood it previously. It's just that Medicare could negotiate for a price on the medications that are covered. So is that just a lie by the pharmaceutical industry, or am I going too deep into this?
Yeah,
I
think you're right. I think that is misinformation. I mean, obviously we haven't seen the final bill yet, but there's nothing that I've seen in any of the legislation that would say the federal government would dictate to doctors or patients which medications they could take. I think that is a not factual. So, but yeah, but there, you see what the pharmaceutical industry is trying to do. They're trying to kill this proposal, and they're using their you know, it's a longstanding tactic to whip up fear among seniors, hopeful that they will then call their representatives and tell them to oppose the bill. And I mean, that's what they're trying to do.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're saying it looks like misinformation. We should probably.
Yeah. I mean, I think that is false. Yes.
All right. Luke Broadwater, congressional correspondent for The New York Times, fact checking the pharma ad that you may see on TV any day. Tell us more about these five veterans, U.S. military veterans, who were advisors to Senator Kyrsten Sinema, who resigned yesterday and sent her a scathing letter saying she was selling out her constituents. Who are they and what else was in the letter?
Sure. Well, as you may know, Senator Sinema, being one of the few holdouts to the Biden agenda, has come under withering criticism from many people who used to support her. She has been protested at airports. There was a high profile incident where some protesters followed her into the bathroom at Arizona State University. Many former supporters who campaigned for her have withdrawn their support now. And this is the latest example. These are five veterans who served on an advisory council to Ms. Sinema, giving her advice about how she should approach veterans affairs and different legislation concerning veterans. And they all said that they were talking amongst themselves and they have become disgusted with her for a couple of reasons. One, they say she's basically stopped meeting with them or taking their advice. And then two, her policy positions they find to be a departure from what she promised on the campaign trail. These are veterans who are more progressive, more liberal leaning. They want to see the plans President Biden has put forward go into law, and they cannot understand why Senator Sinema is a holdout in a state where she has a lot of Democratic voters who support her. They look at Joe Manchin and they say, maybe I understand why he's a holdout in West Virginia, where Donald Trump won by 40 points and his voters are much more conservative. But Ms. Sinema won on the backs of a lot of progressive votes and a lot of progressive organizations that knocked doors for her. And they do not understand what she's doing. And they think, particularly with the prescription drug issue, that she is hurting veterans' health because of her opposition to the prescription drug plan and the affordability of prescription drugs for seniors.
So you raise an interesting question. With Joe Manchin, you can kind of figure out why he's taking the positions that he is. He represents a fossil fuel producing state, so he's digging in on the fossil fuel industry's interests. And there are other things, too, there that, you know, that we could talk about with respect to Joe Manchin. But for Sinema in Arizona, it makes less obvious political sense. In fact, here's a clip of Senator Bernie Sanders from earlier this month, kind of scratching his head here for about 45 seconds about Kyrsten Sinema.
As I understand it, you know, I'm not privy to everything here. In some cases, you guys know more than I do. But I don't think that's, you know, I think Senator Sinema's position has been that she doesn't, quote unquote, negotiate publicly. And I don't know what that means. We don't know where she's coming from. What I have heard, and I don't know if this is accurate, this is a problem. I have heard that she is opposed to having Medicare negotiate prescription drug prices with the pharmaceutical industry and lowering prescription drug prices. I have heard that she is opposed to asking the wealthy and large corporations to pay their fair share of taxes. That is what I have heard. Maybe I'm wrong. But I think to answer your question, yeah, I would love to see her in the same sense as Senator Manchin. Tell us what you want and don't want.
Tell us what you want. Now, this conversation we've been having so far, Luke, about her opposition to Medicare being able to negotiate prescription drug prices, did she ever say that out loud?
No. That's the amazing thing about these two senators and their different approaches. Joe Manchin does negotiate behind closed doors, but he is in some ways much more open with the press. He will stand there and take questions for a long time in the halls of the Capitol. He will answer reporters' questions, sometimes in a confusing or changing way, but he will take the questions. Whereas Senator Sinema has not done press conferences about what she wants to see in the bill. She will not take questions in the halls of Congress, and her staff won't even comment on her policy positions. So you'll hear something that she said in a meeting, and you'll have it from multiple sources, and you'll bring it to them and say, I heard she's against, she told all her colleagues she's against raising this tax on the wealthy. What do you have to say? And they will decline to comment. So we're kind of left to guess what Senator Sinema is thinking through leaks from meetings, through comments she's made to other people, but she herself has not commented. And it makes it very difficult to understand what she's thinking or what she's doing because of this strategy. And I know it's most of the reporters on Capitol Hill find it frustrating.
By the way, listeners, your calls welcome, mostly on Kyrsten Sinema and the Democrats' fraught Build Back Better negotiations, also on Steve Bannon, held in contempt of Congress, or Tom Malinowski, congressman from New Jersey, facing an ethics committee accusatory report on not reporting stock trades or anything related for New York Times congressional correspondent Luke Broadwater, 646-435-7280, 646-435-7280. John in Fairhaven wants to push back on this idea that the government wouldn't be saying what drugs you could take if Medicare gets to negotiate prescription drug prices. So we'll hear an opposing point of view on that from what we thought was the fact. John, you're on WNYC. Hi there.
Good morning, Brian. I would respectfully disagree with your guest's comment that it was false, the pharma's ads about restrictions the government might place on medicines you can get. It may well be overstated, but I think if the government becomes, in effect, like a health insurer that many of us have now, there'll be a formulary. Invariably, I don't know of any private system now, my own included, that doesn't put restrictions on what drugs you can get. You know, they'll have tiers of drugs. The more recently produced ones aren't covered or covered at some enormous price. I would fully anticipate that if Medicare begins to pay for prescription drugs, they'd also introduce a formulary, and that would mean there will be some drugs that just won't be available or will be available at an enormous price to the patient. So I don't think it's completely accurate to say that's false. It may be overstated what the pharma industry is saying, but I think it is probably true at root.
John, thank you. We need probably to do a separate segment on this with somebody who's really a pharmaceutical industry, analyst and medical expert. But would it be accurate to say, at least, Luke, that in the bill, Medicare would not be allowed to introduce those kinds of formulary tiers?
So I think the issue here is the ads that I saw, and I'd have to go back and fact check them, made it seem that seniors would not be able to get the drugs that they were already getting. And I believe that to be a scare tactic. I don't think that is accurate based on what I've seen in the legislation. There may be some point he's making about as they negotiate on different drugs, some might find, you know, there might be some decisions made about which are more expensive than others and what people have more access to. But my understanding of the legislation is there would not be some deep cut to the drugs that people are already using, already getting, and would not be able to get anymore.
How different do you think Sinema's and Joe Manchin's demands are if they're eventually going to make a deal? If Sinema is all into protecting Big Pharma and Manchin is all into protecting Big Coal, those would be two very different things. And I read one article saying that Manchin mostly wants the climate provisions taken out of the Build Back Better package, and he's okay focusing on the social safety net aspects, child care, elder care, and other things. Sinema is more concerned about pharma and the tax rates. How different or similar can you report that their issues are?
Well, they're different in some key ways. As you mentioned, Senator Sinema is okay with the climate change reforms, where Senator Manchin is opposed to the biggest ones in the Biden agenda. Senator Manchin's okay with raising taxes on the wealthy and corporations to pay for the plan, whereas Senator Sinema has opposed any tax increases, even a dollar more or a cent more, on corporations and the wealthy. So line by line, they have different objections. Again, Senator Sinema is opposed to the negotiation of pharmaceutical drugs, whereas Senator Manchin is okay with that, but he's opposed to Medicare expanding to dental, vision, and hearing, whereas I hear that she's okay with that. So they're in the Senate nowadays, since it's 50-50 and Democrats need every single vote, every Democrat, if they want to be, can be their own king or queen of the Senate. And while most have chosen not to do this, they've chosen to sort of get in line with the Biden agenda, even though they may have personal reservations about this policy or that policy. These two have decided that they will bend the agenda to their will by being holdouts. So eventually, in a closed door room, there may be a meeting of the minds and everyone will agree on something, but we're just not there yet.
We'll continue in a minute with New York Times congressional correspondent Luke Broadwater. A lot more to do. Stay with us.
Hi, I'm Sean Carlson, host of All Things Considered at WNYC. If you donated during our recent pledge drive, know that your support carries WNYC and lets us continue to be here not just for you, but for everybody in our community. And that is what makes this all work. We are so grateful to you. If you have not had a chance to donate, you still can. Call 888-376-WNYC or go to WNYC.org and click on donate.
Support for WNYC comes from Best Friends Animal Society, dedicated to saving dogs and cats in shelters around the country and helping families to keep pets in homes. Best Friends, save them all. More information is available at bestfriends.org. Lemonade, the home insurance that gives back. Lemonade takes a flat fee and, after covering claims and costs, donates the rest to charities customers care about. More information at lemonade.com/WNYC. Macbeth on Broadway, starring Daniel Craig and Ruth Negga, directed by Sam Gold. Limited engagement begins March 29th for 15 weeks. Tickets available at macbethbroadway.com.
This is WNYC, 93.9 FM and AM 820, NPR News and the New York Conversation.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC with congressional reporter Luke Broadwater from the New York Times talking about Kyrsten Sinema as a barrier to President Biden's Build Back Better agenda and other things that we'll get to. And people keep calling in about this issue of Medicare being able to negotiate price with pharmaceutical companies, which they cannot do now, which would be in the bill and which Sinema is blocking. We had one caller on it before raising questions about whether that is really a good idea. Here's another caller, Kate on Staten Island, one of several who are calling in who've had experience with the VA, the Veterans Administration, which is allowed to negotiate price. So, Kate, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling in. What do you know?
I am a nurse practitioner. I spent 36 years working in the Department of Veterans Affairs, as it is known. And I am here to say that what drives a lot of people to the VA is the fact that their private insurance is not paying for their medications, or they are overwhelmed with medical bills and especially pharmaceutical bills. That drives a lot of people to care at the Department of Veterans Affairs in all levels, outpatient care, home-based primary care, all kinds of care. And that has been my observation in 36 years of providing primary care within the Department of Veterans Affairs. I retired this year, and veterans who were not covered for expensive diagnoses such as hepatitis C are very, very extremely happy with the care that they have received from particularly the GI service, the VA. And those drugs and those medications are in excess of $70,000 for what is potentially a cure for the illness. And those patients receive excellent care at the Department of Veterans affairs. And likewise, a lot of Medicare recipients are on fixed incomes, and I think it is absolutely disgraceful that you are being fed this line from Big Pharma. And I would have to say, in 36 years of dealing with patients and their medications, and I was prescribing medications for 36 years, I did not find the evidence of any complaints about medications to any serious degree. Okay. In fact, that was one of the things that veterans were happiest with, that their copayments were sometimes zero for service-connected conditions, and sometimes for some medications were $8 or $9 a month, even when this medicine cost hundreds to thousands of dollars. So I'm here to say that's how it really works when you can negotiate prices, not this Big Pharma cartoon of what they're trying to tell us about. And if you want to see something that's more reality-based, just look at Dope Sick on Hulu or Netflix. And I'm here to say that 95% of it is very true.
So the As a VA, person from, just to make
superior
very sure to, that I'm understanding you and everybody's understanding you, though I think you're making yourself very clear, the VA, as huge a government-funded medical system as it is, does not have a formulary that allows certain drugs to be covered and certain drugs not to be covered or not to be covered as well as the private insurers do.
No, that's not what I said. I did not even mention formulary, okay? Anywhere in on earth, in this country or any other country, you are going to have scrutiny, as VA does, about what drugs are effective, what drugs are indicated, and all. And you have more review as a VA provider with a national network. And I might say that we have had computerized record systems throughout the country that are all connected for more than 20, 25 years. So there's a lot of data on this.
Mm-hmm.
So you would be looking at, if you came to the VA and you had medications, and they would be looking at what it is that you have and what prescriptions are equivalent or what prescriptions are available. And then there's always mechanisms for special drug requests. And these are scrutinized by licensed pharmacists, not by somebody who calls themselves a claims representative and has absolutely no medical background.
Mm-hmm. So it's similar to current Medicare.
No. In terms of current Medicare, in terms of Medicare Part D prescription plans, mm-hmm. No, because the VA is able to negotiate prices nationally. So, and that's true of medications. It's also true of some things, even such as home oxygen. The VA pays a lot less for the same oxygen setup in the home that Medicare pays many more times, which that is a ripoff of the government.
So, cheaper for
Why
the
are we subsidizing the pharmaceutical industry to this extent?
I hear you. So cheaper for the taxpayers, but not restrictive in the way that pharma is claiming that Medicare would be. Kate, we so appreciate your call. And listeners, we promise we will do a separate segment on this with guests who are experts in it. Kate certainly has a lot of expertise with her background that she was describing. So, Kate, we really, really appreciate your experience and your expertise and filling us in. As we continue with Luke Broadwater, congressional correspondent for the New York Times. Before we get off Kyrsten Sinema, Congressman Richard Neal, chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, which writes the tax bills, and she's standing so far against tax increases on the wealthy, as we heard from Senator Sanders. Congressman Neal said he spoke to Sinema yesterday and came away saying she is ready to make a deal, but a deal is not imminent. And I came away from that article going, what does that mean? So can you translate that to plain English for us? Ready to make a deal, but a deal is not imminent.
This is the frustration of covering Congress these days. Everything is, especially when it involves Senator Sinema, is everything is through like lights and mirrors and smoke. And you have to sort of read the smoke that's coming up from a closed door room. But the there is talk that Senator Sinema and Senator Manchin are getting closer to making a deal with the Biden administration about a final bill. It sounds like some people are leaving some of the talks more encouraged. There is a lot of pressure, I think, to get this done this year and have it not spill over into 2022 in an election year where, you know, things could get even weirder. So they want to get a deal. And as you can see, the president is agreeing to cut lots of things out of the bill as he talks to these two senators. I mean, we're seeing, you know, key provisions of the climate change reform drop out. We're seeing community college funding drop out. We're seeing paid leave be shrunk tremendously. And so and last night, President Biden detailed a number of these cuts to his own plan at a CNN town hall. And we're going to be looking at something that's probably half of what Democrats initially wanted and probably a fourth of what budget chairman Bernie Sanders wanted. So it's being shrunk. And the centrists are kind of getting their way at the end of the day. They're going to have the final stamp on this bill, it seems, because their votes are so badly needed to get to that 50 Democratic senators.
Roseanne in Fairfield, you're on WNYC. That's Fairfield, New Jersey, right? Hi, Roseanne.
Joe, I just want to say, as a moderate voter who voted for Joe Biden, I certainly respect him, and I would vote for him again. But a little disappointed because I was hoping we would pass that first infrastructure bill that we need so badly in the East, I'm sure in the whole country, and with our crumbling roads and bridges, and then do what he had said initially, hope to pass the other one, which I certainly agree is needed. Although New Jersey, we have two-year college, and we're able to do that, and I believe in that, but I don't know if we have to do that nationwide. And I believe in climate and everything else, but a little disappointed. I think some of the progressives, I don't like that term, but anyway, I think they got a little bit too aggressive. And really, he won because I think because of us moderate voters. Now, I'm 78 years old and have been waiting for this infrastructure bill. As you know, how much we need it in the East. In New Jersey, too, in New York. So a little disappointed. I was afraid we're not going to get anything.
Now, Roseanne, the progressive's position is without tying the two bills together, then people like Senator Manchin and Senator Sinema, once the infrastructure bill, which they want too, is passed, then they won't have an incentive to come to yes at all on the Build Back Better provisions. So it's a strategic play to make sure anything gets done. Is that so objectionable?
No, I certainly understand. I'm just a little disappointed because I was just hoping we could get that, you know, I'm older and we've waited so many years for that first one. And I'm just so afraid that we'll get nothing. You know, and that's what we need first of all. Certainly, I'm a former teacher. I'm a retired teacher. And I believe that we should do whatever we can for the children and families and so forth. But that's all I have to say. You know, as someone said on TV, you know, we voted for him. Most of the moderates did vote for him. And I'm disappointed with them anyway, because that whole thing about as Congressman Claiborne said, you know, that whole thing about defunding police, which we never, ever said, and he never did, and the Republicans just patching on to that.
Yeah, and I hear you. They're twisting that, certainly in the case of Biden. Let's come back to that one another day. But, Roseanne, keep calling us, and thank you very much for your call today. Before we run out of time, Luke, I want to touch on your coverage of the four members of the House, three Republicans and one Democrat, the Democrat from our core listening area, Tom Malinowski of New Jersey, drawing accusatory reports from the bipartisan House Ethics Committee. And in Malinowski's case, this has to do with failure to disclose stock trades. Can you give us some specifics?
Yes. The congressional investigators who probe ethics complaints have cited these four lawmakers for doing things outside of the ethical rules. Representative Malinowski's, the complaint against him, which he admitted to, is that he failed to file the proper disclosures on hundreds of thousands of dollars in stock trades over a 2-year period. He admitted to this. He did file his annual reports disclosing the stocks. There is no allegation in the report that he improperly enriched himself or took corrupt actions. It is merely that you're supposed to report your stock trades every 45 days if you're making stock trades and disclose that so that in real time people can know what the congressman is invested in. And he wasn't doing it. He admitted to the committee that he got too busy. He feels really bad about it. And
Too busy. So Malinowski's defense is, I was so busy, I forgot to report my stock trades to the House Ethics Committee. Really?
Yeah, his exact quote to the investigators was something like, this isn't a good excuse, but I was, he didn't want to have a staffer do it. And so he said he was going to do it himself and he just didn't do it. He said, I have an overwhelmingly busy job. This was one of the things I needed to do, but I did not do enough pressure, didn't put enough pressure on myself to do it. And I was simply careless. So that he admitted to it, he copped to it, and he's going to be up for a tough re-election, I'm sure, and I'm sure this will be used against him in the campaign.
There's an old Steve Martin routine about all the things in history that people could have gotten away with if only they had said, "I forgot."
Well, I will say, of the four reports yesterday, his is the only that doesn't allege. His is a reporting issue more so than a corruption issue, if that makes sense. They did
right. As investigators. So they're not accusing him of doing this for corrupt purposes, like failing to report that he bought pharmaceutical industry stocks as he announced his opposition to Medicare prescription drug negotiations, something like that.
Exactly.
It's not something like that.
Exactly. One of the other allegations in this report is that, one of the congressmen used insider knowledge and then his wife bought stock in a company and made a huge return off of it. But nothing like that is alleged against Mr. Malinowski.
Luke Broadwater, congressional correspondent for The New York Times. Thanks for filling us in on so many things.
Thanks for having me.